The following is a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.
Well, hi there, everybody. I'm Sean Wood, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show for Tuesday, January the 31st. On today's broadcast, we'll talk with Johnny Heidenreich and get an update on his recovery following multiple injuries he sustained in an automobile accident back on December the 5th. Brooke Tatnall will stop by and talk with us about winning his fifth Australian title. And Scott Lutz talks about bringing 410 sprint cars for the low-budget guys to Big Diamond Speedway. That's all coming up next on the Sprint Car Show, brought to you by Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions. And Kinzer Air Filters, proudly made in the USA. With 30 years' experience, Kinzer Air Filters is a trusted name in the racing industry. Their 360-degree dome positive charge air filter is the cleanest air filter on the market. From sprint cars and midgets to late models, drivers rely on Kinzer Air Filters as a brand they can trust while being economically affordable. It's easy to use and cleans with soap and water. To learn more, call Roger Kinzer at 812-327-7103. That's 812-327-7103, or visit KinzerDirect.com. Kinzer Air Filters, made in the USA. And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. We're pleased to be joined now by the Hot Rod One himself, Johnny Heidenreich. And Johnny is recuperating in Connecticut after a horrific highway accident that occurred back in December, as Johnny was making his way back to Pennsylvania and eventually back home to Indianapolis for the International Motorsports Industry Show. And unfortunately, the accident did occur. John, it's good to speak with you. How are you feeling these days?
Yeah, hello, Sean. Always good to talk to you. Enjoy the conversation. And we both have the deepest love in our heart, auto racing and the fans and the people that all involved around it. You know, typical, Sean, like we had discussed earlier, we had a little conversation. My one owner I drove from NARDC Midgets and SMRC, Johnny Givens, we were just talking. Him and his girl were out at the races there at Fort Wayne. Now, they left at midnight and drove. They got home here at noon at Poughkeepsie, New York, you know. And as racers and fans and everybody involved, and a lot of other people, you know, we tend to get on the highway and put a lot of miles on, and we're used to going from one state to the next with little sleep and keeping ourselves going. And I just kind of got caught short. I wanted to swing up through and see some of the speed shops here in Pennsylvania and through Ohio back out the end of the other trade show. And just made a bad choice. I wanted to get around Baltimore, and I just ran into trouble. So I paid the price for it, that's for sure.
Well, for the fans who hadn't heard, indeed a great price, multiple broken ribs, broken ankle. And that was the big concern, was the ankle, was your right foot, which is your throttle foot. You've had a few surgeries. How have the surgeries gone, and what is the doctor saying about when you might be able to return to the cockpit?
Yeah, this is the thing, Sean, as we all go. I kind of joked around my girlfriend, Kim, up here. Her comment, as soon as I became conscious out of the surgery that night from the deal, she said, one thing's for sure, she's known me for 26 years, and she said, by now, I've come to the one conclusion: you're not going to die in a car accident. They've had plenty of chances.
So. Oh, jeez!
But the other thing that was just awful. I kind of, you know, the old adage about seat belts. I've been beat up, but quite honestly, this time, Sean, the seat was crushed. I had all my equipment in from seals in the back, and it crushed the seat right up against the steering wheel. And I just stopped for gas. And this situation anyway, I kind of got thrown out behind the wheel. But I did take a pretty good hit in the windshield. I had 100 stitches on my forehead, and but you know, with previous broken neck and so forth, crazy enough, the surgeons there at Geisinger Medical Center must have done a great job, because the neck held up great. I broke 7 ribs on the right side and broke my arm completely through, and they have plates in that, and then my ankle and right leg. So yeah, we've got a little recoup, and it's probably gonna be 6 or 7 months till we get back out of this thing. So I'm hoping May. I go into the seat of the surgeon tomorrow, and he'll do x-rays and see where we're at. But I'm really hoping to get back to the fairgrounds at the end of May for the Champ Car race.
And, of course, we're taping this interview on Monday night, and so Johnny has his meeting with the surgeon coming up today during the day. Of course, this show airing each and every Tuesday at noon. So you're optimistic then, the Indy Mile for the Hoosier 100, do you think there's a chance you could be back behind the seat at that time, or is it going to depend upon what you find out later today from the doctor?
Well, I think it's still early. I mean, of course, today he didn't have to remove the plate. If he'd had to remove the plate that they put in the initial accident holding the fibula together, it would have took me back to scratch one. But he was able to leave the plate in place, which gave me about 4 weeks of healing on the backbone. The problem is all the little feeder bones, a little similar to what Tracy Hines went through on, and they'd all go out to make your ankle go up and down like you worked the throttle. But, you know, Sean, it's like anything else, you know, it's crazy. I'm one of them guys, of course, I'm getting later in my career now and winding down. I mean, I'm about ready to put 50 years in the history books behind the wheel of a race car, starting with quarter midgets at 5 years old. So the thing is with this sport, you walk out of the grandstand, you hear the people talking, the young kids out there, oh, he's just a kid, he made a mistake, you know, or whatever, he's learning and so on and so forth. And then you get out there and the older guy made me sure, oh, he's getting old and stuff. Well, the bottom line is in this sport, the beauty of it is we just shift gears on how we compete early on, the aggression and just the drive that you do sometimes puts you up in a position you need to be at. And later on, we just have to use more of our brain, more thought, retrain ourselves on how we get the job done. So I'm looking forward. He's pretty, at this point, he's pretty hopeful I'll get at least 90% or pretty good range of motion back. So whatever the handicap, it's like anything else. We'll just have to deal with it. And we can make different throttle pedals. We'll figure it out. And I'm anxious to get back in the seat and get going again.
I'm curious to find out, John, at what point, as knowing you as long as I do and as passionate as you said we both are for auto racing, at what point did your instincts take over once you regained consciousness at the crash to try to pry yourself out of the situation? And at what point post-life flight, post-early surgeries, were you starting to think about getting back into the race car?
Well, these are the crazy things, Sean. You know, I mean, I seriously, when I came to, and it must not have been too long after the crash, and as typically with some head injury things, 3 weeks ago maybe I had a little bit of a nightmare where I could hear the van accelerate and so forth, and fragments came back of what happened. And I distinctly remember a very dark area, and I could see glass, and I could see I was laying up on a dash and trying to register, like, what had happened, where I was, what was going on, and I heard a gentleman say, hang in there, you'll be all right, the help's on its way. And I said, just help me get out of here. And he said, you're in a car accident. And he stepped back. Of course, my forehead had about 6 inches of the whole front of my forehead was split and laying down, so he was probably pretty... But I pulled myself free, but then, stupidly enough, when I pulled myself free, I fell out of the seat onto the cement, but my leg was pinned under the dash, the one that got hurt the worst. And the other sad thing is I laid there for almost an hour until the chopper got there. We're at a racetrack, 5 or 10 minutes, and you're somebody's there helping. You're a lot less than that, really. So then for whatever reason, I became conscious again, and on the chopper, you could feel the helicopter, and it reminded me of a couple of flights that I've had with the sprint cars and so forth. You just wonder sometimes. When I broke my neck at Eldora and had all those issues, you know, the first couple of weeks, you know, you just weren't sure. But I don't know how many other guys, but I've been beat up a couple of times, and we know it can happen, but I guess when we're strapping, and we always think it's just not going to happen to us or happen that night, so we just continue. Because the love of the sport and being competitive and being able to make that car do what you can make it do, or your mechanic has an idea, or a chassis builder, an engine builder, to try something different, and it, racing is just a phenomenal, challenging sport for a lot of people to be involved. It's just been very rewarding my whole life.
Well, you gave us a scare that night in October back in 2004 when USAC raced at Dixie Speedway in Woodstock, Georgia. And we were doing a live webcast that night, and your throttle stuck on the front stretch, and they had to take you out via life flight. And we were looking back at some old notes from the Daily Item newspaper, 1997, the midget flipped down at Silver Spring. And, of course, a couple of years ago, the fire down at the PRA on the asphalt in Florida. Yeah. So I know you don't want to relive some of that, but yeah, I remember that. I remember that broadcast all too well.
and the
chopper landing outside of the track, then having to come in and get you, and then taking you out. And of course, we learned you were fine. It was just precautionary measures because of your neck.
Yes, that was the main thing. I was knocked for a minute, but and that's what I tease our safety equipment guys. You know, I said, you know, I'd probably be over right now with my career if not for all the fantastic safety equipment they've come out with and done to help save us. And really, this auto accident just showed the difference in some of those situations where the full containment seats with the shoulders being now used to take away some of the rib damage and other injuries we have from getting bent over the wraparound seats and not having them wrap around quite as far to break ribs. I mean, we've just come a long way. There's been times that the worst thing that a driver suffers now with a full containment seat and everything else is we had a deal there, Big Diamond, with USAC 2 years or 3 years back, and got upside down 3 and 4 there. And the biggest thing is you're claustrophobic. You're so trapped, and there's so much stuff. And as did the fire down in Georgia, you know, you're burning up. The flames are all around you. You try to take a breath, and as soon as you do, you burn your throat. So you're holding your breath because you know you're trying to get out, and you've got latched on seat belts, you got full container, you have to turn sideways, you have to do the seat, you have to do the radio belt. I mean, you know, it seems simple when we get in the cars, but when you're in a situation like that, there's just a lot of things that really come into play.
Have we come as far as we can come, or is there still room for improvement when it comes to cockpit safety for the drivers today?
You know, I'm sure we'll constantly be readdressing and addressing things. Just as now we've had some, you know, and sadly enough, you get feedback from like the head and neck restraint device, still a fantastic piece. But now, as I told Trevor at the Grandview deal, we had an incident where, you know, people, I'm sure, not so much nowadays, but some of us older people, you'd pull into a guy's driveway, and the deal back in the day was you'd have your dog chained to a dog coop, about a 20 to 25 foot chain. And you'd pull in their driveway, and he'd jump out of the doghouse, and he'd run, and all of a sudden you hear this echo from the chain taunting against the doghouse. You hear this, like, boom, you know, and the dog would, like, up in the air, and he'd stand, and he'd be barking against that chain. And I told him that's exactly before I passed out at Grandview that night with the USAC guy. We went straight up in the air over right rear. We came down head first into the dirt, and I felt that helmet go snap, and my head stop, and I heard that echo through my helmet, and about that time, my face was like Garfield on a windshield. My face and my body kept getting smashed against the helmet and the shield until the thermometer came up your legs. As you feel you do, you start getting lightheaded, and pretty soon, you know, it's over. And so I tease him, maybe we need a bungee strap or some type of a spring deal to absorb some of it. But, you know, anywhere there's a safety, they're designed for certain things, and then there's other places that we constantly are addressing that. But I think the seats and the containment's just the most fantastic thing lately, and the head and neck restraint device has been the best by far.
We're talking with John Heidenreich. 36 times he's gone a victory lane with the ARDC Midgets, and that's good for 8th on the all-time win list, all-time winningest midget driver at the Flemington Fair Speedway. And John, of course, originally from Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, recuperating now in Connecticut, but making his home in Indianapolis. This was, as you mentioned before, your 50th year of racing. When we talked a few weeks after the initial accident, the plan was to have a car ready for the Chili Bowl. Of course, you were the third person ever to win the famed Chili Bowl. Is it frustrating not being able to celebrate your 50th anniversary in racing as you had hoped to?
Absolutely, but you know, as did a lot of people nowadays, what's happening to us all, Sean, is we're readjusting, reshuffling. I got some friends at Roush Yates that were good late model racers, and the cost they've gone back to on the modifieds and so forth. Everybody's trying to restructure for the love of the sport, trying to figure out what we can do and where we can go from here. And right now, as long as I drop back, and I shouldn't say drop, I ran the focus cars with the boys, and just loved it, you know. I mean, enjoyed the challenging the kids and being able to do what you can do with the focus cars. And I guess I'm going to try to. We keep teasing ourselves as we get older. I guess I'm going to try to back play the 50th issue, and I'll shoot for next year, because this year, till I get my legs and get things back in shape again, it's going to be a tough deal. But I had a lot of things working. I had some people on the table ready to help for for making a 50th year comeback, and that's what my hope is, to get like with Tommy and those guys and Wolfie and Johnny's Midas down there at Zemco or Kreitzie or somebody, and then see if I can get something going to run a couple of wing shows and with the sprints. And I also hear, I don't know if it's been relieved, Donnie Kreitz with our buddy Ryan Smith back there, you know, might be running a little bit at Williams Grove this year coming up. So you're seeing some of these kind of things where the guys are bringing some new guys in and rolling some things around a little bit. So I just like to get a few more hard competitive laps out there. I mean, the days of Barry Camp and Jimmy Nace and all them guys, Billy Steef, Deweese, Lance is still out there and stuff, but both Wolf boys, so you get to see the Wolf kid now running. So I'm still able to compete out there, and I want to hit another generation here before I hang up my helmet.
So it sounds like you're still planning more for the future then. So if you are able, when the doctor gives you the green light to get back to racing, what would you like to try later on this year if you're able to get back to, again, racing per the doctor's orders?
Well, at this point, I think probably pick some ARDC midget races and some of the stuff out in the Indiana area and the Power Eye stuff. The Focus car for sure, because the Focus is it's just that little step above the. It's like the 270s and the 600 mini sprints. You up in the 600, you got a little more throttle response, a little bit more challenging, and some different things. And yet, on the same token, these Focus are the 600s. You have to be smooth and keep momentum up. So they're just all fantastic practice device and training devices and race cars. I mean, I shouldn't say. I mean, they're just competitive. Everything's got its own little deal. Like the 600, you start shifting and doing the different things. So the main thing on any sport you get into is just getting back into your reflexes, getting back into, you know, yeah, I've had some issues up and down where you just have to retrain or go about it a different way because maybe one part of your anatomy doesn't work quite as strong as it used to. So you got to pick another way to skin the cat. That's all, you know. I mean, sometimes you have a strong defense on football, so, you know, and not much on offense. And, you know, you have to pick your strong points, and that's what I'm going to do when I get back in. I'm going to do the midget because I have the most control. I have my own car to play with in the midget. Johnny Givens is going to buy a Fontana for me to play with some of these races. So that I can do without burning myself out too much, the big tires and the heavy stuff. And so we'll get the midget going, get our reflexes back, and get our game face back on, get our hunt face in there, and then we'll try to milk things and see how we get things going for next year then.
How about strength-wise, John? I mean, it's been a little more than a month now since the accident. How has the strength been coming back for you, and how are you able to get around so far?
Well, that's another issue. I would have never believed until just, well, 2 weeks ago, I went to get a shower, and I had to have a lot of help to get around. And, again, with your broken arm, your broken ribs, and the whole right side was worthless. So, but, yeah, I absolutely cannot believe how my muscle mass has deteriorated. So, yes, I am. I'm gonna have to work on it. That's what we're going to address tomorrow, and he'll start bringing me up on the small weights for trying to get therapy going to different things. But it's going to be a combination to get everything back into play. So, but that's the neat thing with racers. We're pretty dedicated, and we just, you know, you just constantly just keep working at it, and we'll get back in shape.
And I have to believe that there's been a great outpouring of support and people talking with you and sending cards of get well wishes. How overwhelming has that been for you?
You know, Sean, it's fantastic. The people the cards from New York and California, you know, after being 50 years, I've been all over the country, and the hard part is to get back to everybody and let them know it truly, truly, especially when about a month ago, I wasn't sure if I was going to keep my foot or lose it, which was going to be a tough, you know, it just would have been tough. I mean, girlfriend Kim was pretty strong, says, you know, you you don't get to that point until they say it's over. So, and then she found me another surgeon up here and crazy enough in Manhattan up here, and he's just phenomenal. So, but the ups and the downs when you lay here and you just, you know, and you're trying to figure out what, where, why, when, how, because this is messes up, you know, my job situation with Seals. I can't travel beyond the road. You know, you, everything still keeps piling up on you, and then to try to get back in the seat. And like I said, I have a few things that I can put together for next year, but I've got to get to a position to, it takes time to get ready for that too. So we've got a pretty tall order here in the next couple of months to to get things rolling. But absolutely, the cards, and when they come in and you're sitting here and you open up those, and they just kick off old memories and things you did and some fun and different challenges where, hey, remember when you got spun out, started 24th, and still come back and ran second at Belleville or something. And they're right, you know, you just keep digging. You just put your head down and just keep. I guess you don't even focus on a result. You just work hard at it and evaluate the results when it's there. You know, you know what I'm saying? I mean, sometimes if you try to think too much, you just put the drive down and just go forward. And those letters do all that. They just help you put those things in perspective.
We've had two tragic incidents lately with Donnie Ray Crawford and Dan Weldon that has shown people that it's more than sitting there and watching cars go around in circles. That this sport is, has been, and forever will be about family. And we're so glad you've taken time out this evening before you head to New York tomorrow to hopefully get a better report from the doctors. It sounds like the reports are getting better and better all the time. And hopefully May, if not somewhere down the line this year, you'll be able to race something as part of the 50th and then get back out there for next season. Well, John, listen, as always, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Folks, the only guy that probably can out-talk me and out-talk John is John Force. One of these nights we're going to have to sit down there in Indiana and have the two of them on as a guest on the show. And I think I just have to just sit back and I'll play the commercials and let you guys do the show for a night.
we get to see Force once in a while when he's in town up there having his shop there in Indianapolis. And, of course, you know, he had a serious loss in his racing organization and stepped up to the plate to even try to do. I mean, we all do the best and the most we can. Dan Weldon, just everything just fell perfectly into a bad situation. You know, the aggression for going for the money, the situation, you know, some of the things where one of the things I wish we need to preach more, we need more flagmen like a Nicky Fanaro back in the day when he'd come down after the race at Grammy and talk to the rookies and tell them, look, you know, racing is respect. You can't go three grooves across the racetrack and then go three grooves on the exit in the next corner. There's respect that you deserve out there, and you have to run within certain parameters. You know, this, it's not about anything you can do or want to do. And especially now with the full containment seats where we're restricted in visibility and everything else. And I think if anything, sometimes these shows and the flagmen and things, we could just keep reiterating a little bit more about those kind of things in the back of our mind to stay on top of. But sadly enough, exactly, Sean, I mean, racing, if that's where my life ends, it couldn't get any sweeter. I mean, it's I love the sport. Everybody does the best they can, even if there's a small situation. Like one of the things I've talked to the seatbelt manufacturers that got me in Florida is the little Velcro strap on the lap belt is a nylon material, and it melted and actually glued itself fast. So I said, can't we do something differently about this situation? And the same with the shoes. I had leather shoes, and that's where most of my injuries from the fire and the burns and stuff were. The leather melted into my ankles and my feet. And of course, now I know in a champ car with a heavy fuel load, leather's not the thing to wear in those situations. But, you know, we just keep going forward, and it's just a phenomenal sport. It just really is.
Well, John, we're glad to hear you're in great spirits, and we wish all the best of luck as you continue on your road to recovery after your horrific car accident. And we look forward to seeing you not only in person in Indiana in May when we head out to cover the Indianapolis 500, but somewhere down the road, whether it's with ARDC Midgets or USAC, and we look forward to seeing you back behind the wheel of a race car again real soon.
I appreciate it, Sean. Thanks. I'm looking forward as well, and always good to see you guys and talk to you. And always looking forward to get back to the Pennsylvania Posse Ring. Just it's about as good a race as you can get, and I've traveled all over the country, so doesn't get any better in PA.
John Heidenreich joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We'll take a break and be back with more right after this. The world leader in suspension technology, Penske Racing Shocks has been providing custom-built, high-performance shock absorbers to all forms of racing for over 20 years. Offering only the highest quality suspension products, shocks are available in non, single, double, triple, and four-way adjustable configurations. All Penske Racing Shocks are hand-built, tailored to meet a driver's feel or car setup, and dyno-tested, ensuring the highest attention is paid to detail, consistency, and performance. For your short track needs, contact Dave Reedy at Penske Shocks at 610-375-6180. That's 610-375-6180. Penske Racing Shocks are available direct from the manufacturer or through many dealers worldwide. Visit them on the web at www.penskeshocks.com. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions. And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Well, we promise you that we do take this show internationally, and we're going to do that right now. Coming off his fifth, count them, five Australian Sprint Car titles, and winning probably one of the most prestigious ones of all time, the 50th anniversary of the title, we bring in from Sanssouci, New South Wales, Brooke Tatnall. Brooke, congratulations on winning the title. I know it was a marathon down there in Speedway City, but congratulations on a tremendous run on Sunday afternoon.
No, thanks, Sean. Yeah, it was definitely a prestigious event. You know, it is our Knoxville Nationals, and it is what every Australian dreams about. You know, we don't have the luxury of just electing to pick a number. There's only one car with number one in Australia, and the only way you can get that is by winning the Australian Championship.
And, of course, your father won that title back in 1988 at Speedway City. What was going through your mind through those last few laps as you were closing in on that fifth title at a place that meant so much to your late father?
Well, there was a lot more thought going through my head prior to the last few laps. But, look, you know, we went there with the dreams and ambitions of being, you know, only the second father and son combination to win the Australian Championship at the same racetrack. Steve and Gary Brosier had also done it at the same racetrack. So, you know, look, growing up as a kid, all I ever dreamed of was winning an Australian Midget or Speed Car Championship. But, you know, that's where I grew up around. And when I started in sprint cars, all I ever wanted to do was win at least one Australian Championship. And it took me 17 years to win my first. So, to close in on five. But, you know, reality was, this is where my dad won his one and only Australian Sprint Car Championship, despite the fact that he won three Speed Car Championships. To win the 50th, I think it just adds a little bit of added prestige to it. You know, it's always prestigious to get one, but to get the 50th, it's definitely something. And, you know, I've said it before, you know, you can be the best sprint car driver, you can have the best team, you can have the best mechanics, you can have the best of everything. But, occasionally there's those certain nights where stars align, and for whatever reason it happens, this was one of those nights that I think we were just meant to win it.
Well, we'll talk about the Cricky Motorsports team in just a moment. And again, we want to thank Wendy Turner and the fine folks at Speedway City for making the streaming audio free so that we can listen around the world, including those of us on the East Coast here that were wrapping it up at 6:30 in the morning. And as you were slowing down in your victory lap, the commentators were saying you were punching the air after the checkers. It must have been just a great relief. Taking the lead with 11 laps to go and then getting the victory. Take me through the first stages of the race coming from the outside of row number three. How was the car, and when did you start to realize you had a shot at winning that fifth Australian Sprint Car title?
Well, I mean, look, Speedway City, the promotion, they did an awesome job. Anytime you've got a racetrack and it's got to deal with 70 sprint cars, and what makes it worse, it is just like Knoxville in the aspect of the heat and the temperature. You know, we had 40-degree heat days, which is like over 100 degrees heat. So, yeah, the track was always going to be dry and slick and hard to get a hold of. They reworked track just prior to the feature race, and starting in sixth position, we won the championship from starting in the exact same spot last year, I believe, and you know, we knew we always had a good shot. The one thing is, with the experience that we have going to America, and all the years of experience that we've gained, whether it be Australia or America, and even some of the road racing we've done, the longer races probably definitely suit us better than some of the other guys. And, we knew we definitely had a chance. I think if it was a 25-lap race, you know, I would have been very, very nervous and not quite as confident, but knowing that it was a 40-lap race and that we could, you know, take our time. We'd already checked out what everyone else had on for tyres, and you know, there was a variance of tire compounds and stagger sizes, and you know, we definitely had one of the cars with the tighter setup on it. So when you come down to the last 10 laps, we were going to be in pretty good shape. And as it panned out, you know, we did take the lead with 11 laps to go. And, you know, part of that was, again, comes back to experience. Sean Dobson did an absolutely awesome job once he got to the lead and leading the race. And, you know, I've got to say that all that beat him was experience.
I was going to ask you about those, about not only Sean Dobson, but also David Murcott and Steve Lines.
Hey, we've got a lot. Like, Dave's been around for many years. Age-wise, I don't think he's that much younger than us. You know, Sean Dobson is, you know, definitely one of the exceptional talents we've got on the horizon. You know, he just needs to go into the experience. You know, Steve Lines, he's definitely fast. He's proven it. You know, he's already made a name for himself. And, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, sometimes you've had a bad year, and I think, you know, Lines, he's one of those guys that he'll run a car at 120%, and you know, again, it'll come back to the day that he's just got to learn that, you know, sometimes you've got to back that down a little bit. And you know, he was probably going to be, you know, there at the end, and if he hadn't hit the fence and you know, had the damage that he had, that sheared the right rear off. But you know, a lot of that, as again, comes back to experience, as I keep reiterating. But you know, we've definitely had the car speed, and that's been the biggest thing. I think, you know, a lot of the people have, yeah, this hasn't been our best year. We've had a lot of bad luck go our way, and we just haven't got the results that we're used to. But, you know, dedication by the team and belief within each other, you know, we've had the speed, we just haven't had the results. And, you know, we definitely knew we were going to be there at the end. You know, we talk about pumping fist at the end of the race. I mean, yeah, it definitely was an emotional night for us. My dad winning that race there, a grandstand named in his honour, and Kimber Knighton, who a lot of people in America don't realise, you know, is an old World War II hero. He was probably the first and greatest promoter in Australian Speedway with Rolly Park, and you know, right next to my dad stands the Kimber Knighton stand. So yeah, I definitely got to say I called on a few favours upstairs to get those two guys to get me home in first place.
We're talking with Brooke Tatnall, who picked up his fifth Australian Sprint Car title, and it was on the 50th anniversary taking place at Speedway City there in Australia. You mentioned in the post-race interview, Brooke, that everything in motor racing is rhythm, and you guys got off the slow start, engine problems, and then you finally picked up that win on a World Series event night at Speedway City. Tell me a little bit about this Cricky Motorsports team, and how did you guys finally get that rhythm and get that momentum going to turn the season around for you?
I mean, yeah, this with the Cricky Motorsports have been around for a long time. I think they're, you know, it's around the 30-31 year mark that they've been established, and you know, they've had good drivers. Skip Jackson drove for them in the past. Johnny Schatz has driven for them, and but it just seems to be the combination that we have with Crickies and ourselves. And the relationship that I have with crew chief Pete Capehorn, who had been to America and gained experience with Randy Hannigan, and Shane Finch, who's our tire guy that goes to America each year with Jason Sides. It's the combination and the relationship and belief we have in each other that, you know, makes this team a winning team. I think you take one piece of the puzzle out, and you know, this team, Cricky Motorsports, will still have the success, but I don't know if they'll have the same success as what we have with Brooke Tatnall, Cricky Motorsports, Shane Finch and Pete Capehorn. So, you know, I do believe we're driving for the best team in the country, and, you know, what makes that the best team is that we all believe in each other. You know, you don't have to have the biggest truck out there to be the best team, and, you know, I think that goes to show. And, you know, in 6 years of being paired up as a team, you know, I think our results definitely show that.
And as you look forward to the remainder of the racing season in Australia and then over here in the States, how much momentum do you guys feel you have as you continue on with the racing season?
Well, you know, we've always said, you know, we've won World Series championships 8 times. We're the winningest driver in the history of World Series. But this year, another young guy, James McFadden, who I think has got an outstanding career and probably the biggest career ahead of him out of all the Australian guys right now. He's leading the World Series Championship. Normally, if you drop a round, you can maybe salvage it back. But if you drop two rounds, you have pretty much torn yourself out of the championship. But this year is definitely wide open. James has a strong lead going into maybe the last, I'd say six, I think it's like six or seven rounds, somewhere around that mark. But we've clawed our way back. We had a disastrous start with the first three rounds going absolutely nowhere and being, you know, everyone who rode us off. Now we're back, climbing back up in the second and chasing James down. The momentum is definitely there, and the desire and the passion is, look, you know, I want to race and win as bad as I did when I first started as a 16-year-old kid. And, you know, we just knew we had to get over that one slight hiccup and the hurdle at the start of the year, and, you know, we know we can carry this rhythm through to the end of the year. And, you know, it's like anything, you know, whether it be motor racing or relationships, if you go through, we all go through shaky grounds and shaky paths of life, and it's just a matter about getting back in sync and, you know, pushing through the hard times. And, you know, I think we're definitely going to be there at the end. And, you know, as I say, everyone else had written us off in this championship. And, you know, I told them many, many times, and I'll tell them again, don't ever write Brooks Atnall off, because I don't think you'll find a more pig-headed and determined guy out there.
Well, if it means anything to you, Brooke, the little winning streak that James went on there for that segment of the World Series events, we had interviewed him just prior to that. So, and it goes a little hand in hand, because with the exception of one driver this year, our in-car camera usually finished in the top five in the features. Now, I'm not a superstitious person at all, but it was just a little ironic that we had James on. Next thing you know, he goes on this wild tear, and every time you turn around, it's J-Mac in the headlines there for World Series. So who knows? We'll have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, I'm not superstitious at all myself, but yeah, there are certain beliefs that I have. I keep telling them they're not superstitious, but yeah, once I get in that routine, I don't change. And yeah, hopefully, you know, you're the omen that just gets us over and gets us to the finish line.
What's on tap for the States this year? Do you guys have anything set in stone yet for your racing plans?
Well, for the last 2 years, I've driven for Tom and Sherry Laidegg out of Florida, or Jupiter, Florida, with the 59 car. It's been, you know, a very tough past couple of years with, you know, everyone being in the same boat with the world financial situation and economics. So we're teamed up to go again this year, but what we're doing, we're not really sure. It's all in correlation to what we can still put together sponsorship-wise and how many races we can do. We're hoping we can get all that finalized pretty soon, so we all know what direction we're heading. But even once we can get things in place, we'll never stop looking for sponsorship, trying to, you know, make it bigger and better. We're also looking, you know, we're teaming up to do some more 360 races, and we'll put ourselves out there and be available that if we've got nothing going on and someone's looking for a driver, that we can, you know, do some fly-in, fly-out type of deals where we can go and drive some other people's cars. And you know, we never close any doors, but, you know, with just the way the, you know, world economics are now, we're really trying hard to try and bring some Australian dollars back to the US to help us bankroll this, to, you know, show people what we can do. The last 2 years have been very underfunded. Last year probably took a big toll on us, where a lot of times there we were a one-man band. We're going to races with my wife and my two kids, and that was the team, that was the crew. And you know, anyone that wants to try and compete and beat the Outlaws knows that you can't do it that way. And, you know, we came off the year prior with two strong Outlaw wins, and then we want to get back to that winning form and show the world what we can really do.
Well, Brooke, that sounds great, and if your crew chief doesn't mind, maybe we'll throw the in-car camera on the machine out there in Knoxville when we head out and see you guys for the Nationals in August.
Yeah, we definitely want to talk to you here. We're not opposed to in-car cameras. You just won't have much luck getting on one on the KMS car in Australia. Every time we seem to put one on the car here, we end up on our lid. But, yep, definitely be interesting to talk to you about having one on there. I'm not a superstitious man. I just like whatever I've got to do, to get our sponsors out there, we'll do it.
Well, I'll have to come over to Australia then and have a sit-down chat with the Cricky boys and assure them that we only have one DNF all year, so that's a pretty that's a pretty good percentage-wise there. But anyway, listen, Brooke, thanks so much.
You come down and sit with the Cricky boys, you may end up having a DNF. These guys here definitely like to enjoy their beer, and as Paul Martin can attest, he's had a few DNFs, and that had nothing to do with sitting in a race car.
I guess we'll have to introduce them to Yuengling beer here in the sprint car capital of the world. What do you think?
Definitely, definitely.
Well, Brooke, listen, thanks so much for taking time out this afternoon. I know it's been a hectic several days, Mother Nature not cooperating as she didn't cooperate much here on the East Coast this past year. But congratulations on your fifth Australian title and picking it up on the track that your dad won his own and only title, and on the 50th anniversary. I'm sure that's something that you're going to cherish for the rest of your life.
Oh, definitely will be. You know, I don't know how you go about topping this one, to be honest.
Brooke Tatnall joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We'll take a break and come back, and we'll talk to Scott Lutz and find out about some 410 Sprint Car racing coming to the coal region in central Pennsylvania. That more next as the Sprint Car Show continues here on the Dirt Track Channel right after this. At Rod End Supply, they have the unique opportunity to be involved with all sorts of auto racing and performance-related industries, including farming equipment. Whether you're running a go-kart, micro sprint, midget, modified, late model, sprint car, or a tractor, Rod End Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performing at your maximum potential. Since 1989, Rod End Supply has provided superior products priced competitively with prompt and courteous service. Their promise is to continue to provide superior service with superior products that will keep you in front of your field. To learn more, log on to rodendsupply.com or call Bob Douglas and his staff at 1-800-284-2902. That's 1-800-284-2902. Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Sprint Car Show here on thedirttrackchannel.com. Glad to have you with us. I'm Sean Wood. Well, as you know, we cover both sides of the sprint car racing world, winged and non-winged sprint cars. And right now we're going to talk about the sprint cars coming to an area where they have in the past had a presence with the famed Super Sportsman. And, of course, the 410s making appearances throughout their existence in central Pennsylvania. But now, open 410 sprint car class, at least that's what they're saying through the press release, is heading to the Big Diamond Speedway on Friday evening. And one of the members behind helping to bring 410 sprint cars back is sprint car driver Scott Lutz. Scott, we appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us here on the Sprint Car Show.
No problem. Glad to talk to you, Sean.
Well, of course, Scott and I know each other from my days of covering racing when the 410s were the top draw at the Clinton County Raceway. Now, with some tough economic times, promoter Vern Watson has gone back to the 305s. So it was a bunch of drivers looking for a place to race. So, Scott, my first question is, how did you guys collectively come about the idea of continuing the race for low-buck teams for the 410s, and how did you come up with the idea of approaching Big Diamond to see what their interest was in 410 sprint cars?
Well, I went to them after talking with a few of the guys, primarily because they have their Friday night deal, and I knew they were expanding to a Saturday show. So we were kind of looking, since a lot of the guys are, you know, more the northeast area, closer to Big Diamond than actually to Clinton County, we thought maybe it'd be worth a chance to give them a call and see if there'd be any interest.
And what was the reception from the folks at Big Diamond Raceway initially when you called them?
They seemed interested, but, you know, for them, I guess with what they had going already scheduled for Saturday night, they were kind of talking about a Friday night, but the added purse, they were kind of leery of, and we kind of worked out some numbers that we came up with to keep it fairly similar to Clinton County, and they're willing to take a chance on it and go from there, and if things work out, there could be an increase in purse and or extra dates.
Well, right now you guys have four dates slated, April 27th, May the 4th, June 29th, and August the 24th. From the drivers that you talked with that had run at Clinton County, What kind of a sense do you get in terms of how many cars you might see on a given Friday night when these four dates roll around?
I've personally talked with about 8 different drivers, and they've talked to other drivers, and there's some possibility of a number of 360 guys showing up. So me and the other guys that are involved in this are probably looking at probably 25 to 30 cars.
Which was, in the beginning, for the last couple of years, about average for what Clinton County was looking at. Realistically, what do you hope to see out there on that first date on the April 27th event?
I would think, and along with talking with Big Diamond, 15 to 20 would be realistic, and hopefully it could grow after that, but we'll see what happens.
Well, Scott, when you guys were taking a look at the different scenarios that may afford themselves to you to go race, and Clinton County, of course, being a third-mile facility, Big Diamond 3/8, was that part of the issue that you wanted to have in terms of keeping the track to a small enough size that you're used to the taxing and the wear and tear on your sprint cars?
Yeah, I mean, we were hoping to be able to, have the engine longevity we had, where you're not really turning the motor extremely hard, not like a Williams Grove or even a Port Royal. So we were looking at keeping it to a smaller track, to keep the cost of tires down and, able to get some secondhand tires and things like that.
For the 410 drivers that are listening to our broadcast that might be interested in racing with you guys on those four shows, what are we looking at in terms of a winner's share for a feature event, and what kind of number of laps have you guys agreed upon for the features?
The winner is going to be 1,000 to win, which was similar to what Clinton County was prior to them increasing the purse when they did that. It's 200 to start. The laps I'm not sure of. We've talked, 20, 25, something in there. Either works for me, and I believe they are sticking with the 20 cars to start as Clinton County did. If the car numbers do increase, they have left me know that they will increase the number of cars to start the feature.
And 20 would probably be a good field, I would think. They're at Big Diamond. I mean, they do start 24 and 26, even in the famed Cole Cracker 100 for the Modifieds. And, of course, now a four-division show on Friday evening, and starting time at 8:15, for those who may not know, for the Big Diamond Speedway. We're talking with Scott Lutz. What's the overall goal at the end of the year after that August 24th date? What do you guys hope to have accomplished by then?
Well, hopefully we have the car count, and Big Diamond will see that the interest is there, and I mean, I've heard for years the talk of Big Diamond possibly adding some sort of sprint car class. I know they're taking a look at the 305 this year. Hopefully we'll show them good competition and, maybe something that we can get back and run on a more regular basis next year.
And can you tell us who all besides yourself sat down and discussed this idea about continuing 410 racing for the low-budget drivers in central Pennsylvania?
Mostly it was myself, Jamie Bodo. I guess he used to run with the URC. There was some input from Daryl Steimling. John Smith was involved. They were kind of back and forth with some other drivers, and we pretty much talked about it to try and put the thing together to see what guys would be willing to accept.
Well, it sounds like, as you mentioned before, it's the guys that ran up in Clinton County, and they always put on it. You guys always put on a good show there. On the third mile bull ring, and I would expect that you guys would be doing the same on Friday nights at Big Diamond Speedway. Now, for what many fans may not know, is Scott is the head coach of the Northern Lebanon High School wrestling team. So what's the tougher thing to do, wrestle a sprint car through lap traffic on a third mile bull ring like Clinton County, or try to get an escape and get a point for the win in a wrestling match with 2 seconds left in the third period?
I think the wrestling's harder.
Seriously?
Yep.
And now, why would you say that?
It's much more physical activity.
You prima donnas, I'll tell you what. You guys just sit there. You know what? Let's take the wings off and have a non-wing race. I've been saying that for years, but you say that and you get rung up a tree here in central Pennsylvania.
we've kicked around doing that already with the USAC, but I don't know that that's the time to go out and learn how to drive one without a wing.
No, I think the time is to rent the track for a day or two and let everybody just, it's a little different when you're going in there and that wing is not there to help you stabilize, and if that right rear digs in and the left side comes up and it's like, this is not going to be good, and the late Larry Rice described it as sky, earth, sky, earth, sky, earth. But is that something that you do think could potentially in the future be a possibility that if you grow exponentially like you hope to, and if you guys come back for 2013, you think that possibly one of those nights we could see a non-wing race?
I mean, to me, it's possible. Diamond's already, running the USAC there, so there's obviously an interest in the wingless cars, and I know when you browse the message board, people seem to get excited about the wingless cars coming in. Now, whether they'd accept that as a regular, a regular thing here in PA, I'm not sure, but there would definitely be the interest for it, I believe.
Yeah, and with the number of cars that they usually do bring, and if you guys were at time to be able to bring the car counts that you're hoping for, that could make for a heck of a Friday night of sprint car racing, non-wing style, in the future with USAC.
Yeah, I really believe it could, but we'll see what kind of interest is there.
Well, Scott, is there anything that we can do to help you in terms of getting the word out outside of this interview? Do the drivers need to get in touch with you, in touch with the track? How do they show their interest in being there, whether it's for the April 27th date or the three other dates after that?
Really, it's just a matter of showing up. If drivers would want to contact the track and let them know they're interested in it, that would probably be a help, too. I mean, I've suggested that of the track, not to just take my word that the people are interested in running there, but they seem to be fine with, taking a chance and just have the car show up.
Well, that sounds good, and hopefully the drivers will take a moment and give the track a call, and hopefully we'll see a lot of you guys there that we're familiar with Clinton County, and maybe some surprises come April 27th. Again, 4:10 shows at Big Diamond this year on Friday nights, April 27th, May the 4th, June 29th, and August the 24th. Scott Lutz, we want to thank you for your time. Join us here on the Sprint Car Show. We wish you all the best of luck, and we look forward to seeing you guys on the opener at Big Diamond for the 4:10s on April 27th.
Hey, thank you, Sean, and keep up the good work. You're a great asset to the racing community.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate that. That's Scott Lutz. He's going to be one of the drivers that will be at the Big Diamond Speedway on April the 27th as they bring 4:10 racing. And remember, Friday night's Big Diamond Speedway at 8:15 with the first heat race for the 358 Modifieds, the Sportsman Modifieds, and the Roadrunners. And those four nights, folks, will be four division shows. So it should be a great night of racing, as they say, in God's country, there in the heart of Anthracite Coal Region. We'll take a break and come back with more of the Sprint Car Show right after this.
The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa, is the only sprint car museum in the world dedicated to promoting the future of sprint car racing and preserving the past. Located in Turn 2 of the world-famous Knoxville Raceway, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, except New Year's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Non-wing sprint cars, historic big cars, open-wheel roadsters, and wing sprinters are all on display in the museum, which also features a movie theater and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Make plans now to stop by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum the next time you're in Knoxville, Iowa, or shop our museum store online at www.sprintcarstuff.com. The Hall of Fame and Museum is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time Monday through Friday, and from noon to 5 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays and Sundays.
Welcome back to the Sprint Cars Show, everybody. Special thanks to our guests today, Johnny Heidenreich, Brooke Tatnall, and Scott Lutz. As we mentioned yesterday on our Facebook page, we have a special announcement about a live 4:10 Sprint Car Show. And if you're on Facebook, just type in a search for the Sprint Car Show and like us on Facebook. Coming up on Tuesday night, July the 10th, we will be broadcasting live fly-to-fly coverage of the Lou Blaney Memorial from Sharon Speedway in Sharon, Ohio, 4:10 sprint cars and big block modifieds in an open-wheel doubleheader. And scheduled to compete that night in the sprint cars is Tony Stewart, Casey Kane, and Dave Blaney. Plus, we'll have a special live version of the Sprint Car Report at the track. More details on that as they become available, but mark your calendars. If you can't make it out to Sharon Speedway, it's a fantastic facility, but if you can't make it out and you're listening to us over in Australia, 410 Sprint Cars, Big Block Modifieds, live Fly the Flag webcast coverage, Tuesday night, July the 10th, the Lou Blaney Memorial from the Sharon Speedway. Well, that's all for this week's show. We look forward to talking to you again next Tuesday at noon Eastern, right here on the Sprint Car Show on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Sean Wood. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you again real soon. So long for now. The Sprint Car Show has been brought to you by Rod N Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions. And Kinzer Air Filters, proudly made in the USA.
This has been a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.